Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear our voices, you are exactly where you need to be. She is Karen Frazier. I am Rick Hale. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Welcome. So I know that everybody's probably, thinking I sound very strange. Unfortunately, I'm on my cell phone, and Skype is being a real SOB and won't let me set up a new account or even let me talk to my old account. So until I figure it out, I'm going to be on my cell phone. So sorry, ladies and germs and ghosts and ghouls, but that's just the way it's got to be. So, Karen, hello.
Hi. What's new? You're on your cell phone. You have a new computer. That's what's new.
Yes, that is what's new. And we have about 7 or 8 inches of snow outside.
I saw the pictures. Yes, it was sunny and almost 60 degrees here today. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's... I hate you. Yeah, we got about 6 or 7 inches. But you know what, though? My faith in humanity has been restored tonight. We were outside doing some shoveling, and it was right before Jamie had to go to work. And we were outside, we were doing some shoveling, and the guy down the street, he came by, and he had a plow on his truck, and he plowed us out.
Oh, so, see? There you go. There are people, there are still nice people in the world.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, you know, faith in humanity is restored. So, okay, tonight we are going to be joined at 30 minutes past the hour. We're going to be joined by Deb Paramama Lance. If you don't know who she is, and basically you've been living underneath a rock for the last few years, she's an internationally renowned psychic medium, lecturer, author, radio personality, cold case file assistant. So she's a psychic that's actually worked on some cold case files. We'll definitely be talking to her about that. So it should turn out to be a really good show tonight.
Groovy. Looking forward to it.
Groovy. Excellent.
That's right. And so, in the meantime, they have to listen to us talk for the next 20-something minutes.
Oh, God. I can't think of anything worse. I can't think of something worse, and that is the huge boy band tour that is going on this summer, and all I can say is I'm glad I have a 2-year-old boy and not a teenage girl. So thank God.
There you go. I don't know of said boy band tour, I guess. So I believe.
Yeah.
You.
Yeah.
Is it like, well, you know, is it like more than one boy band?
Yeah. You know, I was like, one of my kids was listening to when he was sleeping the other night, I couldn't help but overhear his radio. And they were talking about, like, 98 degrees in the back alley boys or whatever the hell they call them. They're all getting together. They're all doing their thing. And the new kids on the block, and it's going to shape up this summer.
Well, horrendous that sounds dreamy.
So, Karen, you had some really excellent news this week. You have a new book that's out.
I do have a new book that's out. It's actually the follow-up to Avalanche of Spirits. And so it's different. It's called Dancing with the Afterlife. The subtitle's A Paranormal Memoir. And it does talk about my time at Wellington in the last couple of years since the book Avalanche of Spirits ended. However, it's a much broader book than that. It's about kind of a whole look at what I consider what I do afterlife research, as opposed to paranormal investigation or ghost hunting or whatever. And so it encompasses a lot of topics and personal experiences that I've had that seem to suggest to me that consciousness survives death. And so I've been fascinated for years with conscious survival of death, and that's what the book is about. And so Jim read it and he said it's a better book than Avalanche, so I'm happy with that. Cheryl has a copy but has not read it, and
I'm gonna read it this weekend.
It's her weekend reading.
My weekend
a little
reading.
Late reading this weekend.
Yeah, sorry.
And then William Becker, our good friend, read it, and he really liked it too. So I'm really excited. I'm really happy that I was able to get it out. And you can find it. You can go to the Avalanche of Spirits website, avalancheofspirits.com. You can find links to it there. You can. It has its own website, dancingwiththeafterlife.com. Or you can go to my website, KarenFrazier.com, and it's there as well. So I'm really pleased. I'm really excited. And you know, you never know you're writing a book until the book writes. At least with me, I never know I'm writing a book until the book writes me, and it did. So there you go.
Right. Yeah, and you know, I enjoyed Avalanche of Spirits. I read it twice. I read it actually the first time in one night when I was at work, and the second time I read it, you know, over a few weeks. But mm-hmm. The funny thing is like my wife, who she respects what I do, but she doesn't really have much of an interest in it, mm-hmm. and she actually read Avalanche of Spirits and loved it.
Well,
so, I mean, if somebody like my wife can read it and love it, then, yeah, I mean, she doesn't even care for this kind of thing.
Well, but for me, it's the afterlife research that I do is something about more than just a scientific curiosity, and certainly I have a lot of that. But for me, what it's about is it's about emotional connection. And that's a universal language that women speak. And so while I'm not saying that my book is necessarily a chick book, I think that it appeals to people on a level that's broader than a ghost story, because my books are also about relationships, and they're about the relationships that I have with the spirits that I encounter.
Can you give us a little bit about the kind of spirits that you have encountered there? Now, I know that there is a spirit of a little boy, I believe, that you've come across a few times, right?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Rob St. Helen and I share custody of him.
Okay.
His name is Leonard Beck, and he's a 3-year-old boy who was killed in the Wellington avalanche with his entire family. His two sisters mm-hmm. and his mom and dad were killed as well. And right. He followed me home from Wellington. The very first time I went up there, he followed me home. Well, he comes and goes from my house. Well, one day Rob was at my house, and I actually talk about this in the new book, Dancing with the Afterlife. Rob was at my house, okay. and they were doing, he was with the team doing a paranormal investigation of my house. And Leonard was mm-hmm. here, and Leonard got really attached to Rob as well, and he started going to Rob's house as well. So our joke is that we share custody of a dead kid. So.
No, I think that's pretty funny. And and that really does say a lot towards the idea of consciousness surviving the death of the body. You know, you get a lot of different kinds of theories, even in the paranormal community, mm-hmm. you get a lot of different stuff in real scientific parapsychology, if I can say that.
Sure.
You just get a lot of different theories. But to me, I absolutely do believe, and it's been my experience over many years, that there is a big part of us that lives on.
Yes.
And does survive.
Yes. Well, and what people are surprised to find is that there's actually a significant body of scientific research, not anecdotals, not stories. There's a significant body of social scientific research done by researchers like Dr. Gary Schwartz at the University of Arizona, Dr. Michael Newton, and by the psychical research, Society for Psychical Research. Sorry, they just
–
and it's actual scientific evidence that shows that there is some kind of something that happens, that this information is out there. And it – and so a lot of people say, oh, well, there is no proof, you know, we don't know what we're doing, there is no proof. That's absolutely not true. There are scientific studies, and there's a lot of research that seems to suggest that the hypothesis that consciousness survives death is absolutely a valid one.
Now, let me ask you this, though. I mean, why do you think that people say that kind of thing? Is it that they've never had an experience themselves, or
they saw it on TV?
Say what?
They saw it on TV. I mean, that's the big, if you ask like Lloyd Auerbach, and we've talked to Lloyd a couple times on the show, and if you ask Lloyd, his pet peeve is that people say there's no research in this, there's no scientific, and it's just not true. It's a fallacy that's out there that people don't understand. There are people who are doing scientific research. I've recently gotten really, I've asked Cheryl to try and get him on the show, but he's a tough one to get on. I know. I've started reading a lot of the research of Gary Schwartz, who's a PhD at the University of Arizona, and the work that he's done, and Dr. Raymond Moody has done a lot of stuff. I mean, there's a ton of stuff out there, and it's following good, valid scientific protocols.
Right. You know, and I think it's next month, or rather in April, we're going to be having a parapsychologist from the UK on, Steve Parsons, and his main focus of research is the idea of infrasound. Now, right now, I am reading a paper of his that he wrote for the Society of Psychical Research. He is a member and also the founder of Parascience. And it really would appear that there are a large number of sightings, of experiences in places where there is high levels of infrasound. And one of the, you know, a couple of the theories is that either this infrasound causes people to have hallucinations, or it somehow amps up, or it gives energy to something that is already there. I personally believe that it gives energy to something that's already there.
Could be. See, so here's the thing. I think that what people, okay, I'm going to answer your original question, and that was, why do people think there's not scientific research out there? I think the reason is because there's not any unified overarching theory that explains it all right now. They're doing the small pieces of the puzzle research, like the infrasound and like the work that they do with mediums and the experiments they do. And so because it's all out there, it's still in pieces. It's not, do you know what I mean?
No, I know exactly what you mean. Mm-hmm. And I think another part of the problem is too, is you get, you know, what we would call mainstream science, I guess.
Yeah.
I really honestly do believe that the reason these mainstream scientists, they deny the existence of life after death is because they don't necessarily really believe in a soul. And if they do, then they have to keep it under wraps. I mean, we know somebody
yes.
who's like that.
Yes.
And they have to keep their beliefs under wraps. Otherwise, sure. their colleagues are going to look at them like, wow, you're a complete and total nut job. And I think
yes.
that's a big part of the problem, too.
I have to tell you, writing this book was a real risk for me. It feels like a real risk. I feel like I've kind of left my ass hanging out there, to tell you the truth, because I've always been fairly careful about what I share, about the yeah. things I do, and I've let it all hang out in this. I mean, everything is in there. And I'm certain that people are going to tell me, probably people in my own family are going to tell me I'm freaking nuts. But you know what? It was time. I needed to be very truthful and honest about everything. And so I was. I mean, there's
including
even stuff from
abilities?
Wellington. What's that?
Including your own abilities?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, there's even stuff from Wellington from the first book. From the time of the first book that I hadn't shared, that's in there. I've been very honest in this, and it was a tough thing for me to do, because there is a stigma attached to this, and people think you're a whack job. And I, you know, but at the same time, when I look at science can be just as dogmatic as religion. And why is it okay that we can believe in a supernatural being we call God, yet we can't believe in supernatural beings that are our souls? It's confusing to me. So,
well, I think that's because there's more history behind believing in, you know, a one all-knowing supernatural being like God
sure.
than there's in believing in life after death. I mean, let's face it, it's only been within the last maybe 150, 200 years that people were actually starting to consider that there are spirits of people still wandering around that aren't, you know, demons or angels or
yes.
whatever. I mean, we're talking thousands of years where people are
yes.
like, the only spirits are good spirits and bad spirits are demons and angels.
Yes.
And, you know, and that's kind of what a problem that I have a lot with what I see on television. It seems that people want to take us back to those old days of superstition rather than pushing this, you know, the real scientific research mm-hmm. into the future.
Well, every culture has religious stories. But every culture also has supernatural stories. And I don't know. I've always found that interesting. So anyway, the book's out. It's called Dancing with the Afterlife. I am going to be at the Oregon Ghost Conference in March. It's March 8th, 9th, and 10th, I believe, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I will have books there. I'll be signing them. So, you know, if you want an author signed copy, stop on by there. It's right now, it's on Amazon, and it's available in different EPUB formats, like on Smashwords and stuff. The expanded distribution will take a little bit to sort of roll along, but soon you should be able to get it on most retail, online retailers. And so check it out. I'm pretty proud of it, and I'm also terrified of it. So there you go. Yeah, but, you know, I did that after Avalanche, too. I wrote the book. It got published, and I was like, oh, crap, what did I just do?
Mm-hmm. So. No, you know what, though? But, I mean, it's such an incredibly brilliant book. I mean, just the way you can – you're welcome, and I really do mean that. And it's like you can tell when you read Avalanche of Spirits that – not only is it your heart that's involved in there, but it's also your soul.
Yes. Well, I hope that this will be the same way.
Yeah.
So, hey, Cheryl, I believe that Paranormal Underground has an announcement as well. Is that correct?
We do. And just before we move on, we had a question in the chat room from Bonnie. She already has a request for you. Are you going to make it into an audiobook?
I'm not sure I know how to do that, but if I can figure it out, Bonnie, I'll give it a try.
Yay!
I'll read it.
You'll read it? No, you won't. You'll listen to it. Oh, you'll be the reader?
Yeah, I'll be the voice.
And then he peeled the shoulders. He peeled the straps off of my shoulders while gazing deeply into my eyes.
Hey, I reached down and grasped his.
Anyway, so I don't know. Good idea. I've actually had somebody ask me that about Avalanche as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something that I've looked really far into, but, you know, it's a good idea.
You never know. Maybe.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sorry about that. I dropped my cell phone. See, folks, this is the problem with being on a cell phone doing radio. You drop the stupid cell phone.
Well, you picked it up. We're all good. And Cheryl is going to share some Paranormal Underground news.
Yes, we do have some news. We have some news. We just launched our February issue. And we feature Ben Hansen of Sci-Fi's Fact or Faked Paranormal Files on the cover. We also have a plethora of other intriguing articles. I mean, just tons of stuff. I think this issue is about 76 pages, if I remember correctly.
Excellent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's full of goodies. I'll just, like, if you want me to name off a couple of titles, we have the Leska Sea Cryptid, we have The Haunting at Farrar School, we have The Ostrich Inn, third oldest pub in the UK, written by Rick Hale.
Woo!
That would be Rick with us right now. A comical side to the magazine, which Karen brings along every month with her paranormal top 10 list.
Oh my god, that was so funny.
You've got to read this one. It's called The Top 10 Cryptids I just made up right now, or did I? And it's a list. We kind of talked about this last week a little bit, but the list is hysterical. So read that one for
the monkey and
paranormal comedy.
I never asked when you asked me to do this monthly column.
Yeah.
Did you want me to be serious in it? Because I haven't been so far.
You could do whatever you want. Like anything. I like funny. I like serious.
Okay.
I actually think funny is kind of cool because we don't have a lot of funny going on.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but I like it. I like funny. We have Just a Touch of Love Magic. We have a column on crystals, how to program your gemstones. Our good friend William Becker wrote about remote viewing, and then also how to handle uninvited visits from the paranormal. Jackie Chin wrote Awakening, the Process of Becoming Psychic, which is really interesting for people who are just, you know, realizing that they may have some psychic abilities and how to recognize those abilities and then what to do with it. So that's a good one. I mean, there's just too many to mention. We have Jill Stefko wrote for us a special report on the ghosts of six celebrated Hollywood actresses, which I thought was pretty cool. One of them being Lucille Ball, who's one of my favorite of all time.
Lucille Ball is like one of my favorite old-time actresses, and it's because she reminds me of my grandmother. My grandmother's been dead for years, you know, 16 years or something now. And Lucille Ball, you can still watch her, and it makes me think of my grandma.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. She's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, I was a huge fan of I Love Lucy, but I was one of those people that thought that when Little Ricky came along, that the show kind of sort of jumped the shark a little bit.
No, I don't care because it's like watching my grandma. I still watch reruns. It's like watching my grandma.
So we have a lot of good stuff. I haven't even mentioned the half of it, but go to paranormalunderground.net to check it out. You can download a copy for $1.99. Here's another part of the announcement. Starting next week, fingers crossed, readers can go and actually subscribe to a digital yearly subscription. So what they would do is just...
Nice.
Yeah, just say, yes, I want to subscribe for the 12-month subscription, put in some info, which will take just a couple of minutes, and then every month they will get emailed the magazine. They can, as a PDF, they can put it on their computer and browse at leisure. So save a little paper, read it whenever you want, all sorts of good stuff. And Yeah, they don't have to come back every month. So for
And we have a special issue of the magazine coming up here in a few months, right?
Yeah, we have a special issue coming out. It's going to be our first annual gear guide. And I can't really give out the release date because I'm actually just not sure about it yet. But hopefully soon. And it's going to be a pretty lengthy publication full of all sorts of suggestions about gear to check out, reviews about gear, how to use the gear, you know, how to do an EVP session, safety gear, just, I mean, anything and everything dealing with gear. And so
I'm looking forward to that one. That's going to be exciting.
Very, you know, investigative methodology, all sorts of cool stuff. So for the techies out there, I think they might really like this one.
Well, and even, you know, I'm not a very technical person, and I offered, what was it, 20? My top 20?
Yes.
Yeah, so I wrote about my top 20 really cool paranormal things, and some of them, it's stuff you wouldn't think of. It's not, I mean, some of them, when somebody suggested it to me, I was like, genius!
Yeah. and I'm not trying to say it's only for the technical minded because I am not technical minded.
No, me either.
Obviously I've read the articles that we have, and it's great. It's great content, easy to understand, and very applicable. And so, I recommend it.
so watch for that because that's like I say, it'd be probably a couple months down the line. But when it comes out, it's going to be great.
Yes.
And it's actually the gear guide is something we've talked about doing
for years,
since like the inception of the magazine.
Yeah, this has been an idea, you know, long in coming because we really wanted to do this sooner. Just didn't happen till recently. So
these things, they happen, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So our guest is calling in at 6:30. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes.
Are you done, Cheryl? Are you done with all your
announcing? I am done.
Rick, do you have anything to announce?
No, I'm just kidding.
You know, not really at this point. I really don't have anything that's going on anytime. Well, I'm going to be, you know, of course, speaking at the Quad Cities Paranormal in June, and I'm going to be attending a special thing in Tennessee in July.
Oh,
and
cool.
I can't really talk about it just yet because I promised the person that I wouldn't. It has to do with para adventures, so can't really touch on it too much. Yeah, so
big stuff shaking for the Rickster.
Yeah, well, you know, as big as it's going to get, anyways. But also too, in April, I'm going to be hanging out with Chuck Gotsky and his boys down at the Willow Creek Farm in Shannon, Illinois.
Nice.
Which is
super.
It's one of the most, it has everything. It has Native American spirits. I mean, it runs the gambit of haunted stuff. I mean, it's probably one of the most haunted buildings for like this little farm in the Western Hemisphere. I mean, it's hugely, so much activity, and it's always been on my bucket list to go to, and it looks like I'm going to be you know, hanging out with Chuck and In the Dark Investigations in April. We're going to go there and we're going to do our thing.
Great. Oh, that's awesome. I'd also like to remind everybody who's listening to go to Sarah Harris Foundation. Is it SarahHarrisFoundation.org, right?
.org. Mm-hmm.
And grab the safety information there. Make your next team meeting the team meeting that you sit down and you discuss investigational safety protocols and come up with them, because we want you guys to be safe. You can also go to my team's website. It's sspri.org. It's right there on our front page as well. So go get that information. Elaine from Whoopi, who was our guest last week, did a great job, got that written up, and Shane Harris posted it on the Sarah Harris Foundation, and like I say, it's on our website as well. So cool. Let's do this. We need to take a break, right, Cheryl?
Yeah. Can we take a quick break?
Yep. So okay, we'll take great. A break, and when we come back, we have our guest who will be joining us. So stick around. It's Paranormal Underground Radio on Z Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com. Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today. Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Talk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We are your hosts, Karen and Rick, and joining us tonight is internationally renowned psychic medium, lecturer, author, radio personality, cold case file assistant, Deb Paramama Lance. Now, Deb, with all this great stuff that you do, what isn't there that you haven't done? I mean, it just seems like you've done it all.
I haven't climbed Mount Kilimanjaro.
Okay.
Neither have
I. I could probably hook that up for you.
Well, you know, there's lots of things in life I haven't done that are on my bucket list, but
sure.
Yeah, that's what you just listed off is pretty much my life, but more importantly, I am a mom, and I think that's how I got my name, Paramama, in the paranormal community, and, you know, my son is also gifted, and he has his own paranormal group, and we go to these conventions together. Mm-hmm. And people have heard, you know, Nick address me as mom, And for a couple of years, they were like, wait, that's your mom? Dude. So everyone's like, hey, can I call your mom, mom? So everyone in the paranormal community just automatically calls me mom, whether they're older than me or not. And that's fine. It's a cool nickname. I don't mind it at all.
So how old is your son?
He is 19. He is a freshman at Ohio University in Athens, Ohio.
Good for him.
He started his own paranormal group called Redemption Paranormal last year towards the end of his senior year because he wanted to get it started before he actually became a student at Ohio University because he knew that as a freshman he's going to be overwhelmed and getting adjusted with the classes. So he went ahead and got his group started, and they've really grown and become quite phenomenal investigative team. And I'm a guest medium in their group, and I'm a guest medium for actually any group that needs my services. I certainly don't charge anyone for using my, as I call it, my mad skills or my spidey senses for investigative work.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Well, I want to talk about you, but I wanted to start off asking about your son because I have a son who has some gifts as well. Now, he's 16, mm-hmm. and he is in the phase where he does not want to deal with them. He wants them to go away. Did your son go through that phase, and how did you help him with that? I mean, how did he sort of move into...
Well,
go ahead.
Let me just address this question this way. My daughter, who's 14, is by far the most gifted. She is extremely clairvoyant, more clairvoyant than I am, and more clairvoyant than Nick. She sees things in such amazing detail, but she did not use it. It's a long, drawn-out story, but she just chooses to shut that down. And we've had discussions about this, and she just doesn't. She just ignores it most of the time. And I said, well, at this phase in your life, that's what you're going to do. By all means, do it. I would never want to force someone to do something that they didn't want to do.
Sure.
But I have a feeling that as she grows into adulthood, she'll find it very, very useful. And that's her choice. Now, my son, he's much more adventurous than his sister. And in a home we had lived in before this, which was haunted by very crazy, I mean, literally crazy spirit. He was crazy in his physical form, and he's still crazy in his spirit form. It was quite terrifying, haunting for my son. And, he shared with me his experiences, and I tried to address those with him. He's like 7, you know, so it's pretty scary. Mm-hmm. And then the older he got, he started becoming more curious about it. And I had belonged to several paranormal groups. I had been an investigator now going on 16 years. And so as he grew into a young man, he said, Mom, I want to start going on investigations with you. So I would take him with me on occasion, and I'd only take him on investigations where I knew that it was a benign spirit and, allowed him to test his skills, and he did an amazing job. And he's kind of followed in my footsteps, but he's also carved out his own path. But to address, the issues you're having with your son, it's okay if he doesn't want to use those abilities or shut it down right now. But you might want to caution him. It's like putting a lid on a pot of boiling water. It's going to eke out at some point.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I've told him.
Right.
At some point, you have to deal with it.
Right. And he can learn how to deal with it on his own terms. He doesn't have to, for me, it's like flipping on a switch in my head when I tune in. I've learned how to turn it off and on. And he can learn how to turn it on and off at his own will. And he can turn it on when it's useful for him. And there's certainly nothing wrong with that. But to completely shut it down or close that chapter in his life, that will never happen. It will come back and it'll be more explosive for him. I know this from experience because that's what happened to me. I was born this way. But I, as a child, it was the messages I was receiving from spirit that I was passing on to my family and friends was not received with the intention that it was given, and I got negative feedback. And so as a child, when you get negative feedback, you tend to shut it down, and it would explode out of me on random times and inconvenient times. And it wasn't until adulthood that I said, well, heck with it. I have to just do what I do. And I went public with this, about 5 years ago. My career has just taken off. I mean, it really has. It's been a huge blessing, a huge blessing.
You know what really bothers me about the whole thing, Deb, is that there, even in the paranormal community, there is a lot of stigma concerning people with psychic ability. And the thing that always really strikes me as funny is that you get people to say, well, it's not scientific. Well,
right.
you need to do a little research and find out that it's actually more scientific than yelling at something that may or may not even be there.
Yes, that is a very excellent point. When you are an investigator, especially in the paranormal, which is out of the norm, you can't really measure paranormal activity 100% with 100% accuracy. It doesn't fit in a box. I mean, we're still learning every day new techniques, new methods of gathering information, new debunking techniques. That was a big part of that's 90% of the reason why I never told anyone or went public with my gift. Even my own family members outside of my immediate family don't know what I do.
I'm right there with you. Yeah.
I'm serious. It wasn't until last year that a friend of my father's found me on the internet and showed my dad. My dad called me. He's like, what's up? And we had this very long conversation. And my dad said, I'm very proud of you. And, you've gone public, and that's wonderful. So, but, over half my family has no idea. And that's fine with me.
Sure, of course.
Because of the stigma attached to calling yourself a psychic. And even though my son is a very gifted psychic, he does not feel comfortable labeling himself that. So he prefers to call himself a sensitive or clairvoyant medium, but it's all the same,
I call it my spidey sense.
Right, your spidey senses.
My spidey sense.
Or sometimes I call it my mad skills.
Oh, yeah.
I like that mad skill. It's actually a lot hipper sounding than saying, I'm a psychic medium.
I do say that
at conventional say, I'm the weird lady with the extra mad skills, and because I'm the same way. As soon as I hear I'm a psychic, and even for me, my heart kind of sinks into my stomach, like, oh yeah, here we go again, another crazy person. That's just part of the stereotyping that's been drilled into everyone in our society. Other cultures are not as judgmental about this, but ours certainly still is.
Go ahead, Rick.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you again. I was just going to say, it seems that even in Western society alone, with my family, for example, I've been doing what I've been doing since I was a little kid, and my mom still looks at what I do. She still regards it as being something that, pardon my French, I shit you not. She actually says that it is of the devil. Mm. And it's like, how can you say that something like this is of the devil? It's like, when I go on investigations or I do my research, I'm actually trying to help people who feel that they're going to be, hurt by the devil because they don't want to pass on, to their next life or whatever. And it's like, but we have that stigma in Western society that this is somehow not a good thing.
Right, right. I think it goes back to our religious doctrine, Our country was founded on people who were escaping religious persecution, but at the same time, those religions also persecuted people. So, I think a lot of it has to do with the religious doctrine that we've heard over and over again, and I'm hopeful that in future generations we'll start to open up our minds and accept others outside of our own little circle better. And I really feel that we are getting that way. I mean, you know, I'm really close to both my children. I visit Nick frequently at Ohio University because it is, by the way, an incredibly haunted campus. And all those kids up there are just amazingly open, and they're just wonderful people. And they did not know what I did or who I was. And it wasn't until the second semester that Nick started telling them, like, "Oh, that's awesome." But it didn't matter to them. They were accepting and wonderful young people. And I'm really hopeful that this younger generation will take us to another place as far as paranormal investigation and psychics and spirituality in general.
Well, do you think that somebody actually just said in the chat room, well, what about indigo children? And, you know, that's, of course, Lee Carroll has written extensively about the next generation of kids, which are indigo children, who are more open spiritually and who have more gifts. Do you think that that's actually something that's occurring? Are we evolving in a more spiritual and psychic?
Absolutely. You know, both my children are indigo children. My cousin Jeremy is a psychic artist. He's an indigo child. And in my family, this gift is handed down through the female line until this latest generation. And I read something, this has been a couple months ago, and it said that scientists have discovered a new DNA code in this younger generation of kids being born.
Really?
And it's directly linked to indigo children.
Wow.
So there is a new type of child that has been being born in our planet has a different DNA code. They're just starting to discover this. So there is some scientific backing now behind what I have been picking up psychically for years, that this new generation of children who have amazing abilities, amazing gifts, I feel are being born to help save us, to help save our planet. And they're going to take our planet as a whole to a whole nother level. And it's wonderful. It's been a wonderful change.
So we have to trash the place as much as possible first before they clean it up. Is that the idea?
Well, I wouldn't like that. I'd like to think that's not true, but we have done a lot of damage to the planet. And I just feel like these younger generation, they're starting to see this, and they're trying to clean, you know, literally clean it up.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, and
you know,
go ahead.
Sorry, Karen, go ahead. No, you please.
I was just going to say, I know, like I say, my son is 16, and so I see a lot of his friends, and they're such, and we live in a very small town in a very conservative, I know that people tend to think Washington State isn't conservative, but we live in one of those conservative pockets of Washington State, you know, small town America, and yet, you know, and I know politically how this area leans, and yet I see these kids that he's friends with and the spectrum of things that they accept and they're open to and their willingness to, you know, embrace different beliefs and different lifestyles and different sexualities and different races is far different than I remember seeing in a really liberal town that I grew up in when I was a teenager.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's like, I love seeing that kind of thing. You know, I was just going to say with like my little boy, he's 2 years old and it's the weirdest thing, but it's like people are drawn to him. I've never seen it before. People are drawn to him. They say how beautiful he is.
He is. He's the best. It's because I love him.
But it's like we get perfect strangers that come up and are like, "Your son, there's just something about him that's just amazing." And I have abilities and it come down through my family, and he has them too. He came running out of one of the, we live in a 100-year-old house, and he came running out of one of the rooms one day, and he goes, Daddy, Mommy, a ghost. We've never said that word around him before. He should not know what a ghost is, but he has come out of running out of this room two, maybe three times, saying that there is a ghost. Today, he was talking like he was talking to a dog. And I do believe that that the dog that we had to put down about a year and a half ago is still here. And he is talking to something that I can't see, but he's talking to it like it's an animal. And it's amazing. I mean, but you know, everybody wants to say, hey, my kid's special. But you know, when you get perfect strangers that say there's something special about your kid, there's got to be something there with that new generation of children being born today.
Did you see what Teresa said about him in the chat room, Rick? She said that you need special glasses to look at Theo because he's that cute.
he is.
What can I say?
Well, you know, part of this new Indigo Children generation is that these children are extremely old souls. And I'm sure your son is one of these old souls who has a wealth of knowledge that we would never be able to access ourselves. You know, my daughter, people meet my daughter, and they always like, she's so mature. I'm like, she was born mature. She was born more mature than I ever was.
Yeah.
I'm serious. She is the most gotten together fortune I've ever met and so confident in herself. But that comes from lifetimes of experience that she has in her subconscious. These younger generations of kids, you know, you walk down a street, you make eye contact with one of these kids, it's like they're looking right into your soul. They're amazing, absolutely amazing.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I've noticed that, you know, with him, with talking to people. I went in, like, even with myself, I went into the gas station one night, just right down the street from our house, and I was buying soda, and the guy behind the counter, he just asked me straight out, didn't even know me. He's like, you're psychic, aren't you? And I'm like, why do you say that? And he's like, because you have something about you that I don't see with other people.
Right.
Right. And it's like, this is a perfect stranger that said, do you have that kind of thing that happens to you? People are like, you know, Deb, there's just something about you that I find beautiful.
That happens actually more often than you can imagine. Especially when we attend spiritual conventions. We were invited to be speakers at one of our country's largest, which is called Victory of Light. And there's, you know, those conventions are full of people like us. And for me, I know someone who, when I look at you, if you're truly gifted because your aura is so bright. And that happens a lot. It does happen at paranormal conventions, but not as much. And I met a wonderful psychic, oh my gosh, at Phenomenology last year. And she and I have become wonderful friends. Her name's Kathy. And her last name escapes me. It's like Merlot or something, Mer something. She is one of my friends on Facebook. And we are going to have our tables next to each other at Phenomenology this year. Because I like working with people who are truly, truly gifted and come from a place of humility. Because lots of psychic mediums or people who call themselves psychic mediums are not coming from a place of humility. They come from a place of ego and self-promotion, and I'm not going to name names, but
that's a problem these days.
I have to tell you really quickly, I used to know this husband and wife couple. Clearly they were a couple, and they used to have what my husband and I would call key and moose psychic fights. They would fight over who was the most psychic between the two of them. It was hilarious. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to.
Are you kidding me?
No, it was hilarious.
Oh, good Lord. But she's a wonderful, wonderful, gifted person, and I've taken her under my wing. And, you know, it's wonderful to meet people like that. But again, when you attend paranormal conventions and you meet other people who are like-minded, it's wonderful and uplifting, and the opposite effect happens when you meet people who a kind of, I'm trying to word this as gently and as positively as possible. Yeah, they just, and you know, unfortunately, some are friends of mine on Facebook, and I always hope that they'll see a different path for themselves. Others have defriended me because they know that I know that they're not the real deal. Right. But you know, when you, as a psychic, you cannot engage your ego when you do readings.
Right.
And you cannot, you know, like, and
no, ego gets in the way. As a matter of fact, ego makes you say, I mean, when a psychic is ridiculously inaccurate, when they're typically accurate, I think it's because their ego's talking to them. Ego, you have to get out of your own way.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And when you have psychics or investigators who are all self-promotion, we're the best team, we have the best equipment, I'm the best psychic out there, and they post zillions of pictures of themselves, I'm the best, I'm so wonderful. For the general public, maybe, who's never dealt with a paranormal or dealt with a psychic, they become very enamored with this, and it's very upsetting to me. It doesn't resonate with me, because it sets all psychics back, you know, 50 years when people like this come into this field with all the self-promotion stuff, because it, whenever you live or work from a place of total ego, it does not serve you. And I teach classes as well. I teach classes about living from the heart, living a heart-based life versus an ego-based life.
Love
and
it.
There's lots of psychics out there who don't understand that difference. And that's their own path. But I always try to show people there's a different way that you can live your life. There's a much more uplifting, joyous way of living your life. And living a heart-based life basically just means you're not living your life basing all your decisions on your head, your ego. How could this serve me? Because if you live your life from that place, nothing is ever going to, quote, serve you.
Right.
You live a life, a heart-based life, where you are giving to others, and you come from a place of feeling. It's amazing how much joy you bring into your life, as well as abundance. And abundance does not mean money necessarily.
No,
it can mean friendships. It can mean wonderful new relationships, wonderful new experiences,
creativity.
But, Exactly.
Yeah.
Or finding that dream career that truly, you know, highlights your talents and your gifts. But to get back to Rick's question, you know, I have that people who, when I look at their auras, it's very, very dark and very, very negative. And a lot of times those are psychics. And that's unfortunate. But at the same time, you meet wonderful people, like my friend Kathy, who is, or it's so bright, it's almost blinding. But she's a wonderful and delightful person. So I guess it's like yin and yang of life.
That's right. You need both sides. So I have never seen an aura. And I know people can see them. I have friends who can see them. Oh, you know, what? Can you learn to see auras?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, for me, I see it with my physical eyes, but I have to turn that switch on again.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's like...
So you don't see people just walking around with big colors around them?
No, gosh, no. My head would blow off my body.
I think it'd be kind of psychedelic.
You can't tune in 24/7 or you'd lose your mind.
Right.
But when I do choose to look at someone's aura... it's not them I'm looking at, it's around them. It's usually above their head, and it jets about 3 feet from their body. But there are occasions where you meet someone who's extra amazingly wonderful person, whose aura is so bright, you don't have to turn that switch on. I just see it. And, you know, those are a couple people I've met attending these at conventions. They're just wonderfully bright light workers.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I've met one person like that ever. And I mean, there was just, and I don't physically see auras, never have, that I know of. It, you know, maybe when I'm coming out of anesthesia or something.
What is that? That's right.
Yeah. But he had such a sense about him that just to be in his presence, he was pure love. And I would define him as somebody who was a master. It's actually, his name is Reverend Charles King. He's Martin Luther King Jr.'s cousin. And
wow,
the most incredible man I have ever met. Just to be in his presence is like being bathed in love. It was the most amazing thing.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, that would be like being in the presence of Miles Davis. You're just bathed in cool. But, you know, or even, you know, being in the presence of Lenny Kravitz, it's like you're just automatically cooler. But, you know, with the auras, I've never had anybody who said that they've seen my aura before, so I would have no idea if it's bright or if it's, you know, dark side of the force kind of thing. But I know that there are, that with the colors of auras, that there is a, you know, a certain, I don't want to say value, but there's characteristics of them.
Right.
You know, speak a little bit to these characteristics of each color of an aura.
Sure. And let me just preface this by saying your aura doesn't, the color doesn't remain the same. You know, it changes. Depending on your mood and your frame of mind. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes my aura can be red, which is I am not in a happy camper. Purple is usually like a deep purple color. It's someone who's is incredibly spiritual and very religious and also gifted. Gold and white are usually the colors that I see around truly gifted mediums. And it's not like a pure white. It's more like, how can I describe it? It's like a shimmery light. It's like what I would describe as like fairy dust sparkle light. I don't know how to describe it.
Opalescent.
It's like, yes. And it's just beautiful and amazing. And then there's green, and then there's variations, and green energy is very healing, and their healers emit a very green, emerald green type of color. A sky blue usually indicates that they're a wonderful communicator. I'm trying to think of all the colors I've seen around people. A pink. Pink is someone who's incredibly gentle, and it's not like a royal pink. It's a very, very soft, like iridescent pink. Those people are usually very gentle souls. But, you know, just if you look it up on the internet, there's all kinds of listings of the meanings of the colors. But I just started seeing auras a couple years ago around people. It was kind of by accident. But I started, you know, when you tune in, you flip that switch on, all kinds of things come to you. And I was just sitting in a park, and I was just seeing some people watching. I'm like, whoa, there's colors around everyone, huh? Yeah. So then I started doing research. I'm like, oh, that's their auras, dummy. So I'm like, okay. But at that time, I never looked up, like, what does yellow mean? Or what does the color green mean, or blue or purple? It just came to me intuitively, like, this person's a very deeply religious person. He's very close to God. And then I started researching, like, oh, I'm pretty much a target. But, you know, the colors have different meanings for different people. But that's what those colors mean to me. And it's a really interesting thing. Yeah, now, plants and animals also emit auras as well. And you can start practicing or learning how to see auras if you just simply bring a living plant into a room and dim the lights a little bit and just stare, not at the plant itself, but above or beyond it. And you have to kind of get yourself in that daydreamy type of state.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's almost instantaneous. And same with pets. Pets have auras as well. Everything actually has an aura, but that's a whole other subject for another night. But, you know, trees, rocks, lakes, they all have their own energy.
So everything has a life to it, a life force.
Yes.
That's right, because it's the fabric of the universe.
You got it.
Yeah. So what we need to do is, we're at the top of the hour, we need to take a break. When we come back, you can stick around, Deb?
Yep.
So when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about how you receive your information, because I'm always fascinated when I talk to psychics about how they get the information, you know, what they see, hear, feel, how they differentiate it from their thoughts. So let's talk about that when we come back.
All right.
So this is Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. Stick around. We will be right back.
First there came radio, and it was good. Then it got bad. Then there came satellite radio, and it was okay. Then it got too expensive and kind of sucked. Now there is something new, something better, something free. Stitcher Radio for the iPhone and BlackBerry. With Stitcher, you can hear all the shows and podcasts you can imagine, rate them, and build your own station. No downloading, no syncing, no problem. Just pick a station to get started, like American News and Politics. Now, look at the shows you have to pick from, pick one, and start listening. Like it, make a favorite, and start your own station. Don't like it? Thumb it down and say bye-bye to shows like it. Or thumb it up to find more like it. Plus, you can search and find your favorite podcasts. We have over 1,000 shows to pick from. Stitcher Radio, the natural evolution in audio listening. And it's free.
On the go and missing another one of your favorite Z-Talk shows? Now you don't have to. Simply go to the Google Play Store on your Android phone and download the Z-Talk Radio app. The best part is, it's absolutely free. That's Z-Talk Radio, only found in your Google Play Store on your Android phone. Download it today.
Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
If you are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com, a proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.
In her riveting novel, Break in the Beyond, writer Kim Casey brings to life a supernatural tale filled with mystery, humor, and intrigue. Kim's suspenseful story focuses on Risa, a compassionate social worker who assists Owen, a young psychiatric patient. Is a 300-year-old entity speaking through Owen, or does he simply possess multiple personalities? Visit awningpublishing.ca to order your copy of Breaking the Beyond. That's A-H-N-E-E-N publishing.ca.
Thank you.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. We're back at Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We are your hosts, Karen and Rick. And since about 30 minutes past the start of the show, we've been having an excellent conversation with Deb Paramama Lance. And, Deb, just wanted to say thank you so much for sticking around for another segment.
Sure, no problem.
So before we went to break, Deb, and thank you for sticking around, I'm enjoying talking to you. Before we went to break, I told you that I am always curious about how other people receive their information. I'll tell you why. The way that I receive mine, well, I have in several ways. I'm empathic, so there's that. I can feel people's vibes. That sounds so bizarre, but
hey, and then, you're talking to. Yeah. Someone who reads people for a living, so nothing you tell me is going to sound
right.
Bizarre.
Well, so I was trying to explain it when I was writing my book, and the best I can explain it is that everybody's like a snowflake and they all feel different, and if I had to locate the feeling when I tune into it, it's just outside of my head above my right ear. So,
right.
And I have no idea why. And then the other thing that I do is my information comes to me as a download. 1 minute I don't know, and then I do. And so that was very hard for me to start to understand that those three things, the emotions, the vibes, and the downloads were actually psychic information. Because what I thought is I should be seeing pictures, I should be hearing voices, and that's not what I get. I get feelings in my body, I get emotions, I get, these weird, the vibration things. So how do you get your information?
Well, we have a lot in common then.
Okay.
I'm also empathic, and we'll get into that a little bit later. And I also, as you term it, download, I just automatically know something that I shouldn't. And how you say you feel people's energies?
Yeah.
I really feel people's energies. And before I set 1 foot out of my home, before I can walk into a room or an area with lots of people, I have to do a little bit of what I call maintaining my own energy type of technique, because if I go to like the shopping mall during Christmas season, and you can ask our son about this, I become like an enraged maniac if I don't.
Yeah, Walmart. That's how I am at Walmart.
Walmart. And so, it's really like I go from this pretty mild-mannered average mom to like a raging maniac.
Yeah.
And and I don't know where this energy comes from, and it scares me a little bit because last time we were at the mall, Nick's like, "Mom, would you relax?" And I don't even remember saying this, but some guys walked by me and they bumped into Nicholas and said something derogatory because Nick had his football Letterman jacket on. I don't remember really saying this. I was like, I was cussing at these guys, and like, I'm going to go stab them in the back for doing that. Nick's like, "Mom, what is wrong with you?" I'm like, "What?" I really, it just, all that energy of, like, it's greed and negativity in that enclosed area just affected me so much. And so I'm always maintaining my own energy, protecting my own energy from others' energy. And that's really, really important, especially if you're empathic, because we're like sponges.
Yes.
We're like a dry sponge. You put us in a bowl of water, we suck up everything. And that's exactly how it is for me when I'm in crowds of people. Mm-hmm. And when I do these protection techniques, so these maintenance techniques, it acts as like you're putting on a raincoat in a rainstorm. It keeps out most of the rain, but still you get droplets in, and it still affects you. So like, when I go to these conventions, my son is not empathic, so he can be in crowds and it doesn't affect him at all. But for me personally, it's very, very draining. And I have to go back to my room for like an hour and just stare at a wall with no TV, no technology, just to, I guess, rebuild up my own energy. I don't know how to explain it.
I get it, 100%. I know what you're saying.
Yeah. You know, and it's just creepy, and it's like, it's not that I'm being possessed. Don't misinterpret me. It's just that I'm picking up all this anger energy.
Yeah.
And taking it in, and I am feeling angry.
It's hard to differentiate it from your own. The only way that you can differentiate it is that the emotions that you're having make no sense in the context of what's going on in your day.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And
but Walmart on a Saturday will do that to anybody, you know.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely will. But Nick thinks shopping at Walmart is hilarious. But yeah, that's one way I pick up information is feeling people's energy. But I'm also highly clairvoyant and I'm clairaudient, which means I have clear hearing and clear seeing. And I see spirit activity with my physical eyes as well as my psychic vision or my sixth sense or my third eye.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll see images unfold behind people, and it can be distracting, especially when you're driving. I see images, and sometimes they come to me as, like, pictures, like fragmented pictures.
Like snapshots.
Or it's like a little mini movie, and I'm talking a mini movie.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's the feelings I'm picking up, and the scent, like the smell. I have really powerful smell, and I smell things when I tune into people. I also clairaudient, and I hear things, names being called out, or like a phrase or two being said. So that's how it works for me. But as a psychic medium, I have to train myself how to shut it down. And when you become, for me, when I'm vulnerable is when I'm tired or I'm stressed.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm driving for a long time, I start to daydream. I literally have to smack myself out of it because I can get in a zone where I'm picking up stuff and my switch turns on without me realizing it. And this has happened to me on two occasions. I'll be driving. We live out in the country. We have 11 acres out in the country. We live way out in the country. And we're driving down this nice little country road, enjoying the scenery, and just my mind starts to wander, and the scenery changes on me.
Oops.
I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but I was drove off a road because 1 second driving down a paved road, the next second I'm driving over fields of green grass and
oh my gosh,
a log cabin on my left. But it wasn't actually there. It was me seeing a scene from the past.
Yeah, see, I don't see things with my physical eyes. I just see pictures in my head. So
right,
but now
yeah.
No, see, I do have a question about that because I'm you know, I always think of, you know, the visions that the school teachers had at Versailles back in, I think it was the 1920s. Do you think that that could be more of a time slip?
I have no idea. You know, I've heard of that. I actually think that can happen because, you know, we're on one side of the veil and there's another side of the veil, and on the other side mm-hmm. of the veil or heaven or whatever we're going to call it, there is no time.
Right.
Time is a man-made concept. So, you know, through my life experience, I feel that time, this is going to be hard to explain, but there are places on our planet, there's certain locations where the time continuum kind of does a funky thing. And what we think are scenes of the past are actually going on. I don't know how to explain this. Like, it's like you said, a time loop where time, I forget the word you used.
A time slip.
Yes. And I've heard of this where people are investigating and I think they're picking up ghost activity, only they're not. They're actually picking up living people, and the living people are picking up what the investigators are doing, and both sides think they're picking up ghostly activity.
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
Yes.
And that's a really hard concept for me to wrap my head around because, you know, I'm here in my physical form and time is very important to us when we're here in our physical bodies. But I have heard of that. I've heard of people driving in certain parts of our country where they think it's 3 p.m. and then it should be like 5 minutes at the last and all of a sudden it's 6 p.m.
Yeah.
And
usually that's involved with alien abduction.
Right. I was going to say, I don't get into the whole UFO thing. Not that I don't believe in UFOs, but I don't think that it's always an abduction when this happens.
Okay.
I don't think we can always blame it on aliens abducting us. I think there's just certain, it's like we're like Swiss cheese. There's certain holes in our fabric where things slip in and out and spirits and entities come in and out of our realm, and time has a funny effect in certain areas. I don't know how to explain it. This is just coming from my personal experience.
But it almost sounds like what people would call a portal haunt. I mean, I've actually been involved in investigations where we've had EVPs where the entities actually talk about coming through a portal of some kind. Do you think that there are places in our world or that portals can be accidentally opened up or they're just naturally occurring where these entities can enter in?
I think that it's both, actually, because people can open up portals on their own. And they do this more often than not accidentally. Playing with Ouija boards or other tools that they think are helping them tune in, that can open up portals, which can be very, very difficult to shut. There's also ley lines or energy lines that run through our planet. And when they cross, when they intersect, the energy there is unbelievable. And I feel like there's portals and some of these ley lines. So, you know, I really don't know. That's an excellent question.
So Rick, go ahead. I was just going to say, ask her about her her cold case stuff.
And yeah.
It's like about almost like 7:30, so I thought you might want to get into that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, and that's exactly what I was going to ask about. You know, it's very fascinating to me how law enforcement seems to be so much more open these days to using psychics. And I know you yourself have been involved in cold case files. Can you talk about them? Any of these things that you've been involved in or been under investigation, or how does that work? How did the police come to you and like, hey, Deb, you know, we need your help?
Well, actually, another friend of mine who's gifted was working with a detective, and she recommended me to him, and we started working, and I like the way he has it set up. He doesn't use last names. I'm referring to psychics. He only refers to us by our first name, and I asked him to not ever tell a family who I am. And I don't want that connection with the family because I'm not doing this for self-serving reasons. I'm doing this because I feel obligated to, because if you walk in their shoes for even a second, your heart will break. So this is a calling for me to help families like this. And so I don't want them saying, oh, Deborah Lance is wonderful. That's not what this is about. So the families have no idea who I am, and I remain anonymous, and that's the only way I would ever do this. And so he would just use my first name, and the way this gentleman works, he is a retired police officer, and he gets these cold case files, and he has a whole list of psychics that he uses around the country, and he sends us all the information at the same time. And all he will send will be a picture of the missing person or a picture of someone who's been killed and the place that they were last seen alive, and that's all we know. And then, you know, just start picking up stuff. And for me, I have taken a break from cold case files, and I haven't done a cold case file for almost a year. I will still
imagine
do
that's
it
very stressful.
Yes, I will do it if someone, you know, is really needs my help. But being an empath, it affected me physically so much, and I was really starting to get sick a lot, and I just couldn't shake the images and the spirits that I had seen. And for right. some reason, almost every case I worked on was a child. And being a mother, it's just... it was just too emotional for me. And sure. So I had to take a break. I mean, it's there's some psychics who are not empathic are much better at that than I am, because they don't take on the physical symptoms of what happened to the victim. Well, I do.
Yeah.
So if I'm tuning into someone who has passed in a horrible, violent manner, I physically feel their pain. And sometimes that pain... I couldn't shake it. You know, it would come and go fleetingly throughout the day for me. So there's other psychics who are better adept at handling, working on cold case files, who are not empathic. You can view the crime from a different place, a higher place. And for me, that really is not my specialty. I did solve many cases, but... It's just not for me.
It took too much of a toll, Nick, it sounds like.
It was exactly. Now, yeah. Nick, who is empathic, is a wonderful cold case worker. And he helped solve a case about a year or two ago as a missing young man who had passed accidentally. So he's much better at that. But for me personally, I can't do that anymore.
I hear you. I get it.
If someone was desperate and they needed my help, I absolutely would help them.
Sure.
I was going to say, but with, you know, with law enforcement in general, what is their, you know, their general, you know, thoughts about this? Like I said before on break, I know a lot of, paranormal investigators that are former police officers, and they seem to be the ones that are the most open to utilizing the abilities of psychics, mediums, clairvoyants. What's the general idea in law enforcement, you know, concerning utilizing somebody such as yourself?
I really can't answer for them. I'm not a police officer. But I feel, and I've met many police officers who will tell me off the record, you know, their own paranormal experiences or their own mad skills or abilities. And it's always off record. It's always kind of hush-hush, which I find amusing. But, you know, I do think that police officers or the community of people who are self and her doing jobs that are to serve and protect have opened themselves up immensely these last few years, at least the possibility of working with psychics. And I credit that to the media, you know, having shows like Psychic Detectives or Psychic Kids. Whether you like these shows, love them or hate them, it still propels society to discuss it, open up a dialogue about it, becomes more mainstream. And police officers are humans, and they have families and TVs in their family room. So, you know, I really think that we have come light years from where we were 10 years ago or even 5 years ago.
Sure.
I think that's a good thing. Go ahead, Rick.
No, I was just saying I couldn't agree more. I do definitely see a turning around with people's attitudes towards psychics.
Well, I don't know how we got to a point where, you know, every religions have prophets. There's historical, you know, there have been seers and prophets and oracles and all of that. And this new no psychics thing is kind of sad.
Yeah. Well, you know, we go on these roller coasters or these cycles in society of thoughts. And like you said, you know, there was a time in culture where we worshipped oracles. And this is just my personal opinion, but I feel that Jesus Christ was one of the best mediums ever put on this planet. Mm. You know, if you really, really delve into Christianity, and if you really, really get into the Bible, there's so many hints that Jesus was a medium. I mean, he saw spirits, he healed people. I mean, that's a whole other show. But you're right, we've gone from admiring people like that to making fun of them and calling us all charlatans. But a big part of that is because there are lots of charlatans and there are lots of fraudulent people out there. I mean, Miss Cleo, I don't know if you guys remember that.
Yeah.
Lady, you know, that really is a huge disservice. I'm sorry, Rick?
He said the SB word.
I'm sorry. It's like I'm on my cell phone, so I get like a lot of like breaks and stuff like that, and I think that people are done talking. So I apologize, but I was just saying that.
No.
Sylvia Brown, you know, she did. I think she did a lot of damage to the field as well when she was, you know, saying that. Well, this person, you know, died in water, and the woman's like, no, he was crushed by the building during 9/11. Or the little boy who was abducted from his family, and she said that he was dead, and was like, well, no, he was actually alive two or three blocks away in this, you know, this weirdo's basement. And I think that a lot of people see that. And one of the things that why I stopped watching a certain television show a number of years ago, because one of the hosts on the television show said, don't ever trust psychics. And it's like, how can you say that? It's 130 plus years of research that's put into this. You cannot go on national television and say, don't trust it because it's not real. It is real.
Right.
Well, you know, the thing with Sylvia Brown is I actually believe that Sylvia Brown probably has some ability. That being said, I think that Sylvia Brown also comes a lot of times from a place of ego. And here's the problem with ego and psychic ability is that then you suddenly become terrified of being wrong. And so you insist you're right. And I think I don't necessarily think that Sylvia Brown has absolutely no abilities. I wasn't suggesting that. Yeah, I just think that her abilities are that her ego gets in the way a lot.
Right. That's a perfect example. That's a perfect example of what we were talking about earlier in the show. There's someone who does have a gift, but her ego has, in her own mind, has taken to a place that she can't ever admit that she's wrong. And when I teach classes, I teach psychic development classes. And I tell everyone this. I say, every single one of you in this class has psychic abilities as well as mediumship abilities. I said, because God did not put us on this planet without any type of guidance system. We all have a compass. We all have a map inside of us that is there for us to use to help guide us through this life. It's just that you need to learn how to use it. And I tell people this as well. It's like if I were to take piano lessons, like my daughter takes piano lessons. She's a wonderful pianist. I can barely do chopsticks. But we can all learn how to play piano. It's just that we're not all going to become concert pianists.
No, we're not. You know?
So, but everyone has this ability. Everyone has psychic abilities. And I start off my class by saying, for example, you know, how many of you here were dragged by your wives and don't really want to be here? There's always like some husbands, well, I don't believe all this crap, blah, blah. And I say, well, you know what, sir, you're a psychic. What? No, what are you talking about, crazy lady? And I say, have you ever in your life picked up the phone and knew who it was before you answered it, or a door, you went to your door and knew who it was before someone's there, or you know, and oh yeah, I have done that. Well, where do you think the information came from? So, you know, we all have these abilities, but as I was talking about earlier, once you engage your ego, and this goes for any career, you're setting yourself up for failure, because once your ego is engaged, then it's all over because it's self-serving. So,
well, but I think that even the best psychic in the world, sometimes their ego gets in the way. I know mine does.
Of course.
Yeah,
We're all humans, and humans come with egos.
Yes.
But it's being more conscious of your ego self.
Right.
You know, and as human beings, we can learn how to recognize when we're coming for our ego self, when we're getting cut off in traffic and flipping an 80-year-old the bird because she cut you off. That's an ego self move, you know?
Sure.
Because you're feeling that someone slighted you, so you're going to get back at them, blah, 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 versus coming from a heart-based response to be like, oh, you know, just brush it off. Well, she must be in a hurry, and God bless her. But we all, you can train yourself to start recognizing these ego-based emotions and experiences and actions that we all put out there.
Yeah. See, for me, like, I know, like when I'm engaging with somebody psychically, and I can tell when my ego kicks in, when I start to think I have to be right or I'm going to be embarrassed.
Right.
I have to be right or nobody's going to believe anything. And so that's where I see when working with psychic ability, the ego kicks in, is when I start to think, oh my God, if I'm wrong, I'm going to be so embarrassed.
Well, Karen, I approach it like this. When I first went public doing readings, mm-hmm. I was like, I can't read for people. You know, what am I doing? But the first time I did readings, I just collected donations, which I gave to cancer research. So I figured the worst thing that can happen is that I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And so I just, you know, the first person that sits down in front of me, I said, I've got nothing for you. And she laughed and got up, and then she got up and left. As she's getting up, I go, hold it, something's coming in. Because you can't always connect. We're humans, therefore we're born imperfect. And there's going to be some people that you do rings for that you're not going to be able to, just can't connect. And that's fine. And that's absolutely fine. And I respect psychics who say, I'm sorry, I don't have any idea. And
I got nothing.
Anything for it. And I said that on readings. I still say that. Like, I'm sorry. My head's up in the clouds, and I don't see your grandma anywhere. I don't know what you're talking about. I apologize. And I found that when I come from that approach, I get thousands more referrals. It's like, oh, my God, this is amazing. She told me she didn't get anything on me. Because I think it's refreshing for the general public to see that not all psychics are out for the almighty dollar. I would not want to accept money for something that I did not feel that I had earned. I would not with that karma. So I say, if you don't have anything on someone, just say, I'm sorry, I don't have anything for you.
Yeah, that's what I do. I got nothing. Sorry.
Right.
Wish I did.
You're being honest.
Maybe next time.
Right.
But I mean, that's how I can recognize that. That's how I can recognize, though, when my ego is creeping in, is when I start to worry about being accurate, and when I start to, you know, and that type of thing. So, you know, but a lot of that also has to do with, I think, kind of the perception of psychics that's out there.
Right.
And not wanting to be perceived that way. And again, that's my problem, and that's an ego thing.
Right. Right, and that's fine, and don't beat yourself up for it. We're humans, and you know, we suffer from anxieties and fears, as everyone does, and just have to move on, get over it, and move on. And you know, I'm kind of like I crack jokes in your readings because I like to make people relax. And I'm glad you're reading for someone. They usually are in tears by the end. And sometimes they're tears of happiness because I make them laugh. And sometimes they're tears because I connected them with a lover on the other side. But I think as psychics, we take ourselves way too seriously. I mean, we're human beings, you know. Sometimes when I'm reading, I'm thinking, oh, damn, I forgot to get my husband's shirt out of the dryer. It's going to be all wrinkly. And then I have to pull my attention back to the client. I'm like, hold on, start over. I was thinking about the dry cleaning. And they laugh, like, okay. You know, I think it's refreshing to show that you're a human being with a life outside of, you know, doing readings.
Sure. Absolutely. So I just realized what time it was, and this is about the time we start to wrap up. Do you have a website? Do you have a place where people can go to connect with you? Do you have any events that you're going to be at? Anything you would like to promote at this time works for us.
Well, surely. My website is called Your Spirit Beacon, and I have quite a few events coming up. I'll just read them off real quickly to you. First one is Dead Winter Horror Convention. That will be in Somerset, Kentucky, March 8th to the 10th. Me and my son will be speaking there. Then Phenomenology 105, March 21st to the 24th. We're speakers of all this, so. Tri-County Parafest, April 27th in Fosteria, Ohio. Mid-South Paranormal Convention in Louisville, Kentucky. Fox City Paracon. That is the end of August, not an exact date. And then Creep Fest in Cincinnati, Ohio, October 6th.
You're busy.
Full schedule.
Yes.
Lots coming up then. All right. Well, very good. Thank you so much. Do you want to leave anybody with any final thoughts?
Well, I would like to just also mention my book's about ready to come out. I'm wrapping up the final chapter. It's called True Hauntings. It's about some of the more interesting investigations I've been on. And when I say interesting, usually extremely frightening investigations. And I'm wrapping up my last one, which is on Fox Hollow Farm, which was featured on Paranormal. We were the first investigative team out there ever, way years before Paranormal Witness was filming there. And
is it as scary as it sounds?
Yes.
Awesome.
And it was, for me, the most frightening investigation I've ever worked on.
Really?
This chapter's taking me a long time, because I really, it's a cautionary chapter about how even psychics can bring things home. It's my last thing I just want to mention, but I just want to tell everyone, it's an absolute delight being on your show. People have been absolutely gracious and kind, and that's wonderful. You know, some interviews, people are very skeptical, and they tend to go on the attack, but I just want to share with you how refreshing it is to me, as your guest, to speak with you in this very conversational manner, and it's been an absolute delight.
It's been great having you, and you are welcome back anytime.
Well, thank you.
Comes out, will you come on and tell us some ghost stories?
Of course.
All right. Absolutely. So you know how to get in touch with Cheryl and Rick. So when your book comes out, you let us know, and we'll schedule you back on, and we'll talk some spooky stuff. Sound good?
All right. Sounds great, Karen.
All right. Thank you so much. So that's Deb Lance, everybody.
Thank you, Karen.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good evening.
All right. Okay, Rick, goodbye.
Bye-bye. Good job, Rick. Okay. That was you picked her out, right?
Yeah, I did. You know, I've actually been following her for about a year now, and you know, through Facebook and through her website, and the more and more that I read up on on Paramama Deb Lance, you know, it's like you can just, by looking at somebody, and especially even with just talking to somebody, it's like, this person is the real deal. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this person is somebody that you can trust.
And I do believe that Deb Lance is one of those people that you can trust. And I do believe that her ability is very real. And, you know, it's like with speaking with her, it's always, and we've had many people on the past. You know, I was thinking of like Nick Corey when we had him on. You know, you get that sense of like, this is a person that is not coming from any kind of ego.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
And I love talking to that kind of person.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's a lot of humility there. And that's, you know, like I talk about my friend William Becker, and that's one of the things I've always appreciated about him is his humility as a psychic. And,
right.
Yeah, she's coming from a good place. So, yay. Yay, Deb Lance. good call, Rick.
Thank you.
Yeah. Next week, you're going to be...
Oh, my God.
You are going to be on Skype, right?
Yes. Hopefully by then I'll be able to get my Skype fixed, because it's like I don't want to look like an idiot when talking to a super genius like Dr. Stanton Friedman.
He's not a master's, but not his PhD, unless he's gotten it recently.
But anyway, talking to a guy like Stanton Friedman.
Didn't he correct us last time, Cheryl, about that?
Yeah. I think he
did.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
But whether he has his doctorate or not, who cares? Because he is the big kahuna of UFOs. Folks, next week, you have to join us. We're going to be talking UFOs with Stanton Friedman. I love this guy. He is, you know, he's really smart. But what I find that I just so engaging about him is he's just super fun to talk to. And mm-hmm. We had a blast last time, didn't we, Cheryl?
Oh yeah, it was great. I actually heard you guys talking to him. I didn't get to participate, but you know, obviously I listened to the podcast, and I was jealous because I wasn't a participant.
Well, you can participate next week if you like, because he's just too much fun to talk to.
I'll have some questions.
Yeah, and you know, so here's something. If you guys have questions that you'd like us to ask Stanton Friedman, because I've talked to him a couple of times, I've had my opportunity to interview him.
Mm-hmm.
You could probably email your questions to Cheryl.
Oh, yeah.
Editor, paranormalunderground.net.
Yes.
And we can try and sneak them in, because, come on, it's Stanton Friedman.
This is like...
We're like giddy schoolgirls.
You know? Yeah, I mean, I'm like giggling like an anime schoolgirl on the inside. It's like, see, and this is what's great about doing these kind of shows, because you get to talk to people who are respected members of the community. And, you know, unfortunately we missed out being able to talk to a guy like Bud Hopkins, but, you know, hey, at least we can, you know, we still got great minds like Stanton Friedman.
We do what we can. And Stanton Friedman, like I say, I mean, you respect the guy for his knowledge, but honestly, he's just so much fun too. He's the guy is a walking sound boy. Everything he says, you think, yeah, I gotta write that down.
So true.
I know. So we're gonna have a really good time. And then the week after, who do we have?
Oh, let me pull that up. Let's see. The week after, that would be February 21st, we have Duncan Lunan, who is the author of Children from the Sky. And that is talking about the Green Children of Woolpit. And I think, Rick, you know something about the story.
Yeah, it happened during the reign of King Stephen in England, and I do believe, you know what, it's either the 11th or the 12th century, but all of a sudden, just one day, these two kids showed up, the brothers and sister, speaking an odd language, and their skin is green. Obviously, I mean, you know, of course, in the medieval England, people are pretty much covered in, you know, cow dung or whatever. But they were very well clean. They seemed to be, very human, but they were green. They spoke a strange language. They talked about coming from an odd land. They talked about how they followed the light, which was our sun, out of a cavern, and boom, they were here among us. And it's a very well documented, strange thing that happened. And it's going to be good talking to Duncan, because, you know, maybe he can give us a little bit more insight on it. Obviously, he wasn't there, you know, 700, 800 years ago, but he's done a lot of historical research on it.
It sounds like a really cool topic. I'm going to sit quietly most of the time because it sounds like you know a lot about it. And, you know, I'll just toss in a question every now and then. Well, I'm sure I'll get caught up in the story.
Yeah, and it's not just the Green Children of Woolpit. There have been other instances where there have been green-colored children that just showed up out of nowhere. And, of course, you also have the feral children, you know, kids that were brought up by wolves. Caspar Hauser in Germany in the 18th century, he just, you know, came out of nowhere people claimed that he was assassinated by people that wanted to shut him up because they believed that he was some kind of European royalty who, you know, got stuck in a basement, tied up somewhere, and got loose. So there are many instances in history where odd children just show up.
Wow.
And then when do we have the Project Pegasus guy?
I have no date yet. I was hoping to have one by this week's show, but I haven't heard back, so I'm going to check in again. And I was hoping that it would be the end of February or early March, because we have two dual shows coming up. On February 27th, we're welcoming Dina Ray. She's the author of Halo of the Damned and Bad Juju, and also a self-proclaimed expert on several conspiracy theories. And so we're going to be talking for about half the show. And then we had an opening, and I was hoping to get him in there, but I haven't heard back. And then the week after, March 7th, we're going to be running the pre-recorded interview that you and Rick did with the Dead Files team, Amy Allen and Steve DeShavi.
Oh, they were so much fun.
Yeah, that's a good interview. Great. It's a good follow-up to the one we did before. So I think even if people listened to them last time, they definitely talk about some other things that they didn't talk about, you know, the first time around. And I think that interview is about 50 minutes. So we're going to have a second part to the show, which is open. So hopefully we can talk to him soon.
Oh, I hope so, because really, I want to talk to that guy. I went on his website.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Interesting stuff.
I don't know how to classify it other than, oh, my God.
Yeah, but you know what? I like Googled Project Pegasus, and I forgot that it was actually back in the 80s, it was a series of comic books as well. So that was like the first thing that came up, and then there was his website.
We won't be talking about comic books, I don't think.
We will not be talking about comic books, no.
I don't think so.
Come on. You know what, we got a nerd out on this show sometime, so I mean, you know.
I have a lot of nerds in my life, but I myself am really more of a nerd groupie.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I've decided, is I am a nerd groupie, and that's good. I mean, that's, you know.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Hey, I forgot to tell you guys.
What?
We have a few exciting interviews coming up other than the ones that I just told you about.
Are we giddy like schoolgirls?
Ben, yes. Ben Hansen
is
coming back. He's going to make it, yeah, this time, March 28th.
Yay! Okay.
Yeah.
Yay, good.
We have...
Now, is he going to be able to spend the whole show with us, or do we have a time limit?
I hope so.
Okay.
That's cool. The plan. I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
We just do the best we can.
Yeah. And then Rick, yeah. Rick, who's coming on April 11th?
It was Steve, right?
No, that's April 4th. Steve's cool, too. Steve Parsons from the Paranormal Network is April 4th. Who's coming on April 11th?
Do I not know about this one yet?
I don't, unless you read, you might, no, I don't think you know.
Am I going to be excited?
Probably.
Oh my God, I'm having like a serious brain fart right now.
Alexandra Holzer.
Oh, Alexandra. That was April 11th.
Is that what that meant?
That
yeah,
she was
that's
later.
What that meant. Rick made this really cryptic post in our Facebook page.
He made a total cryptic Alexandra Holzer, and I'm thinking, yeah, okay, I know he digs her, but what?
You know what? It's funny because it's like I blanked on that because I was thinking that it was that she wasn't until May for whatever reason. But yeah, you know, it's going to be exciting to talk to the Alexandra Holzer, who of course is the daughter of you know, my serious man crush, Hans Holzer. And
that's the serious man crush you have.
No, it was, you know, you get like these people, you know, when you're coming up in a field such as this. You know, Hans Holzer was incredibly influential on pretty much everything that I've done over the last 30 years of research and investigation. And I'm so sad that we're not able to talk to him because, of course, he, you know, passed on about a year or two ago. But we're going to be able to talk to his daughter, and his daughter, she does her own thing, and she's an author, and she does her own investigations and meant plenty of TV work. And, you know, so we're going to be talking to her about her stuff, but also going to be talking to her about the work of her father. So it's going to be a good show. Sorry I blanked on that. I was thinking it was a later date.
Oh, no problem. No, it's...
It's all right.
All good.
We'll forgive you this time. So
lots of really
just fantastic stuff coming up.
Yeah. I mean, we have an amazing guest lineup coming up. I'm really excited about it. I hope our listeners are.
Who cares about our listeners? I'm excited.
Well, that's all that matters.
Wow.
Okay. No, I love
just
our
kidding,
listeners. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
There I go. Last time I told them their website sucked. This time, look what I've done.
Gosh, Karen, do you want to have any listeners left?
Oh, one can only hope.
Hey, did I tell you guys we're going to have a new column in the magazine starting in April?
No, who is it?
Well, we are going to have a writer who's going to do a monthly column on, Rick, get ready for this, conspiracy theories.
Oh, you did mention that.
I
yes, it's going to be awesome.
Theories.
Yeah, and it's actually going to be Katie Christopher. She's with a group called NEPA, and they also do a local cable show in their area called, I believe
she's
it's called Ghost Detectives. Yes, yeah, she has been on the show a couple times, along with her mom was on with us one time, and I think a couple of the other group members were on the other time. And so she's got an interest in that, in conspiracy theories, and she's going to do some cool articles starting in our April issue.
Excellent. And my top 10 list for next month is going to be on the top 10 crazy ass conspiracy theories too.
Oh my god. Yeah, and it's funny because I just talked to her this morning about her topic, like what she wanted to write about, what her interests were. And when she said that, I thought, oh my gosh, Karen just told me, like, when was it, last night, that you were doing a top 10 on conspiracy theories. I thought that was funny.
Yep, that's
funny
right.
Stuff.
So, Karen.
Yeah.
So, and then what is your favorite conspiracy theory?
You know, I don't know, because I like them all so much. I don't know. I'm going to have to, I haven't actually come up with my list of 10 yet, because there are so many. And so I'm going to have to sit down and be with them and really look and you know,
narrow it down.
Really, one of my favorite ones is that we didn't walk on the moon.
Yeah, that's mine too.
Yeah. Love
that. That one just has crazy written all over it.
Doesn't it? It's perfect.
Yeah.
So it's probably going to be on the list.
It better be.
Awesome.
Oh, I mean. Okay.
Guys, do you see what time it is?
Oh, there is no show on after us, but there will be probably a replay of any type of show. I don't know what comes on when they replay, but probably, who knows?
Yes,
something good.
Yes, yes.
Something good, though.
Okay, so, hey, this has been a great show. Thanks to our guest, Deb Lance. She was great.
Definitely.
I really enjoyed the conversation.
Yes,
thanks for
fascinating.
Thanks for twisting her arm to come on, Rick.
It was really great talking to you. It was a privilege, you know, being able to talk to somebody who, you know, who like herself.
It was refreshing. Listening to you guys talk, it was just like a great conversation. It just felt like I was sitting there right with you guys listening in. Awesome.
There you go. So, and next week we're going to have another great conversation. Mm-hmm. Come back next week, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, other times in the flyover states. We're going to be talking to none other than Stanton T. Friedman here on Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. We'll be back next week. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.